Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Ready for Your Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Ready for Your Radio Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. This Thursday, the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi hosted the leaders from all five Central Asian countries in the first ever India-Central Asia Summit. The gathering was held virtually. According to publicly available sources, the focus of discussion was bilateral trade connection, activity, expanding business ties, the situation in Afghanistan and Chabahar port. Again, according to publicly available sources, there has not been any major breakthrough in the context of bilateral relations or in terms of what comes next in concrete lines going forward in this conversation. But nevertheless, it was an important gathering, not only because this was the first such meeting, but also because of the timing, given that it was held days after the Chinese president had a similar summit with leaders of Central Asia. Now, where do India-Central Asia ties stand today? What the parties are looking for from each other? What are the potential areas of collaboration and obstacles against deepening ties further? To discuss all these, I'm joined by Ambassador Ashok Sajanhar, former Indian ambassador to Kazakhstan, currently visiting distinguished fellow at the Tilutoma Foundation, Ambassador Ponchuk Stopdan, former Indian ambassador to Kyrgyzstan, currently senior fellow at the Institute for Defense Studies and Analysis, Ambassador Bakit Bashimov, former Kyrgyz ambassador to India. He is currently a lecturer at the Global Studies and International Relations Program and professor of the practice at Northeastern University, and Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today on this very important conversation. So the summit, let me take brief remarks from each of you on the summit and your takeaways from it. So let's start with you, perhaps Ambassador Sajanhar. So what was your kind of major takeaways from yesterday's summit?
I think the summit is very important. The relevance and salience of Central Asia has increased very significantly after the developments that we have seen in Afghanistan over the last 5-6 months when the Taliban has seized power. So whether it is in terms of peace, security, stability of Afghanistan and Central Asia, and that impinges also on peace and security in India. So in terms of timing that you mentioned, that is a very important aspect. As far as Central Asia is concerned, we look upon this as our extended neighborhood because we have had very good relations, but we have not been able to realize the full potential of these civilizational and cultural historical ties because of the connectivity issues. We do not have common borders with any of these countries. So Afghanistan was an important takeaway here. Connectivity was an important takeaway, but I would say that the biggest takeaway was the institutionalization of the relationship, of the regional partnership. So we have agreed that the summit meetings will take place once every 2 years.
Yeah.
And there will be regular interactions between ministers of foreign affairs, ministers of trade, of culture, and of secretaries of the National Security Council.
Right, right. Certainly, the institutionalization of these talks, bilateral discussions, are very, very crucial. But on the content side, though, let me bring you, Ambassador Stopdan, here. So we know that the discussion focused on, obviously, expanding ties between India and Central Asian countries, situation in Afghanistan, and Chabahar port. So within these lines, what is that India is looking for from Central Asia?
Well, I think India has approached the entire region in the yesterday's summit from a three-pronged approach. That one is that we've set a vision for the region, that it's our extended neighborhood. We have an Indian Ocean program. We have a program for the Gulf. We have a program for ASEAN. And Central Asia fits into our integrated regional approach. So this is one approach that India has initiated. And the second is, as Ambassador Sajanhar mentioned, about the institutionalization, the structural aspect of the relationship that will be set up in a different ways, in a number of ways at the higher level. And number three, we now are trying to have a goal agenda for the next 30 years. And connectivity in Afghanistan, all these things fits into these approaches. So I think as far as Afghanistan is concerned, the Central Asian relevance to India is from the angle of transportation, from the angle of humanitarian aid, to having peace and stability from the diplomatic approach. But I don't think India is looking at Afghanistan from the angle of Central Asia to fight against Taliban. That's not the way that I think some people may be trying to look at that. That's not how India is looking at it. Secondly, I think in terms of connectivity, there is a proposal which the Uzbek side had offered about the Trans-Afghan Railway Corridor that will come from Tashkent to Kabul to Pakistan to India. And second is what Turkmenistan has offered about TAPI, the gas pipeline. So these two are new initiatives which has come from the Central Asian side. So I think India is still looking at from the point of view of Chabahar, the INST, from the Ashgabat agreement, all these things that India has put on the agenda. But it seems the Central Asians also like this idea. So the process has begun. It's a good step. It's a consolidation of what we have been doing for the last 30 years.
Right.
Raise it to a new level. Mm-hmm. I think that's how we are looking at it now.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Bashimov, I'm coming to you. So this is how it looks like. This is how the Indian approach is when they look into Central Asia from their point of view. So how does this India looks like from Central Asia? Where do they see India kind of falling in terms of their own interests, in terms of their own needs? I guess the simple question is, what Central Asia is looking for in India? Ambassador Bashimov?
We can't hear you, I suppose.
Okay, let's give him time, Bruce. So if it's possible, please jump in here.
Yeah, obviously I won't be as good as Ambassador Bashima, but, you know, India and Central Asia have been connected for centuries and centuries, and these ties have always been good, having been in Central Asia all over for years and years. I know that the Central Asian people have this fondness when they speak about India, you know, and this is a relationship that carried over even through the Soviet era, right, when Central Asia was pretty much cut off from the rest of the world, but they did have ties with India because India and the Soviet Union had good ties too. You know, people are fascinated with the Indian culture out there, and really, and as we've heard from the ambassadors, what one of the things they wanted is connectivity. I mean, they really want a southern avenue for trade, and which they've been unable to achieve so far, even that 30 years after independence. I mean, it's just a trickle compared to what it should be. And they would like that relationship to grow, and they would like to be able to increase trade and cultural ties with India and renew what was really constant relationship that had been enduring for many, many centuries out there. So I'm surprised it took this long to get the summit together, but I'm not surprised that the summit happened, because I know there's a strong desire on the part of the people in Central Asia and on the part of the governments in Central Asia to increase ties to with India as much as they can. And I see Ambassador Bashimov is back, so I'll let him go from here. Thank you.
Ambassador Bashimov, are you back?
Yes.
Gosh, great to have you. So, yeah, we have two former ambassadors from India who served in Kazakhstan and in Kyrgyzstan. Perhaps you know each other. So we were listening their thoughts about what India is looking for in Central Asia in the context of, obviously, the summit yesterday chaired by the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi. So when you look to India from Central Asia, what Central Asians are looking for out of India?
You know, this event organized after the summit of India's prime minister with all the heads of states in Central Asia. And I see the following important issues which triggered importance of this kind of event. Number one, it's a return of Taliban to power in Afghanistan. And second one, it's strategic interests of India to influence in Central Asia. It's a very natural consequences of the situation today in this part of the world. And I have some recommendations what to do given my experience working in India during the 5 years and analyzing this issue during the last 15 years. Number one, I don't think that India should be trapped by the competition with China in Central Asia. India has its own interests, and India can strengthen its presence in Central Asia given the strength of Indian soft power. I mean, technologies, I mean, Bollywood, I mean, cultural attractiveness, and so on. And secondly, It is
Ambassador, Ambassador Bishop, can you hold your thoughts? Because you are raising two very important points there. First, you are saying, kind of hinting, that India looks into Central Asia in the context of competing Chinese influence there. So India is there to compete China?
You know, I read some articles after this summit. And in these articles, Indian experts mentioning China and comparing itself with China's presence in Central Asia. I can understand that, but it is Central Asia is not the place where India should compete with China. It can be trapped by this rivalry. It's a wrong strategic attitude. And they are comparing, for instance, trade with China or the Central Asians and so on. No, India has its own particularly powerful sites of influence in Central Asia. And because in years to come, even decades to come, if India will be see Central Asia through the lens of rivalry with China, India will not strengthen its presence. Mm-hmm. India should go out of this kind of trap. Mm-hmm. And secondly, India should not strengthen its presence looking at rivalry with Pakistan. It's also, I think, the second trap. India has its own interest, unique opportunity to strengthen its presence without these two rivalries.
Interesting, very interesting topic to explore a little bit further with our ambassadors from India. So very interesting interpretation from Central Asia about what India is trying to achieve in Central Asia, especially in the context of China. I mean, this came up like when the summit was happening or even the news about the summit spread around. So immediately what came to mind is in terms of the analysis of the summit that this is happening immediately after Chinese president had a similar summit with Central Asian leaders. So the question is, I mean, it's kind of open for both of you ambassadors from India. So where China factor in your kind of renewed interest in Central Asia?
Would you like me to go first?
Sure, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, well, thank you very much. And thank you to Ambassador Beshamarov for his comments. But, you know, let me give you my perspective. And, you know, I don't mean to say that this is would be the only perspective. But as far as India is concerned, it is not looking at Central Asia through the prism either of Pakistan or of China. You know, I personally totally reject this assumption that it is, you know, through the eyes of China or Pakistan competing with China. Not at all. I agree with our friend from Kyrgyzstan who says India has its own strengths. I quite agree that India has its own strengths. But I think this is, you know, your question to our Kyrgyz friend was, what is it that Central Asia is looking for in this partnership? And maybe that is something that we need to explore. But from my understanding, Central Asia wants, you know, all the countries are following what they call multi-vector foreign policies. That means they want to have good relations with Russia, with China, and with outside. India is a country that has, it is a benign power. It is not a threatening power. Now, I do not mean to imply that, you know, other countries with which they have relations are threatening powers, not at all. But when you are neighbors, there are always issues that always crop up. You know, there is the famous strategic thinker of India, Chanakya. And he said that neighbors are always, they always have problems with each other and neighbors are friends. India is going there basically for a beneficial partnership as far as India and Central Asia are concerned. And that is why we are looking at stability, we are looking at peace in Central Asia because of what has happened in Afghanistan. It is as much of a threat to Central Asia as it is to other neighbors like India. We are going for putting in money, investment. When at the second Central Asia dialogue, which was held in 2020, India offered $1 billion of line of credit to Uzbekistan. When their president came to India, we offered $448 million line of credit. Last year, when my external affairs minister was in Kyrgyzstan, he offered a $200 million line of credit. It is not competition with China. The second point that you mentioned, Mr. Tahir, was about the Chinese summit. Now, let me tell you that India's summit with Central Asia has been discussed since the third India-Central Asia dialogue took place in India on the 18th to 20th December. We've been speaking about it. Either the five leaders will come in person as chief guests to our Republic Day, or we will have a virtual summit. And then it was announced a few days ago that the Indian summit, the first India-Central Asia summit, will take place on 27th. The news about the China-Central Asia summit came on the 24th of January, and the summit took place on 25th. I know because some journalists from China had written to me asking for my comments on the 23rd, and then they revised their questions on the 24th, because on 24th it was announced that China would host a summit. So I think China organized this very hurried and, in my view, an ill-prepared summit because possibly China wanted to upstage India, that India should not be the first country to have the summit interaction with Central Asian countries. So it is not India that is following China. I think we need to go a little deeper. And if you want to discuss the substance and content of and the results of the two summits, I'll be very happy to do that also, because as I said, it appears to have been a hasty and an ill-prepared summit, and the results as far as China Central Asia Summit is concerned, they show that quite adequately.
Very interesting thoughts there. And also it raises another question. Maybe Ambassador Stubdhan, you might would like to jump in here. You know, yeah, India has a straightforward, the way Ambassador was explaining, straightforward view of why this summit happened. And Ambassador is saying, Ambassador Sajjanhar is saying that, you know, it kind of Chinese initiative to have this summit ahead of India was kind of a last minute decision. So that kind of shows one thing, that is, whatever India's intentions are, there are views in the region and around the region about this summit, maybe coming from China, maybe, you know, Moscow has some perspective about the recent summit, maybe Ankara has its own kind of perspective view about that, maybe Islamabad has different interpretation of why this summit happened and how it happened. So the thing is, the regional perception of what India is trying to achieve in Central Asia, why it is different than what India is trying to present?
I think what Ambassador Bashimo has said and what Ambassador Sajjanhar has said, I think both of them are correct. Ambassador Sajjanhar has explained the technical version of it, the political official version of our approach towards Central Asia. But Ambassador Bashimo has mentioned about overall impression that he got through the media. Let me tell you one thing, that we don't have a single Central Asia expert in India who understand the history, culture, the depth of the Central Asian society, their language, their psychology, their overall thinking of Central Asian people. We don't have anybody. We have journalists who today talk about Central Asia, tomorrow they talk about Arab world, and day after they talk about America or Japan. Therefore, today we have an atmosphere in this country where these things, foreign policy is linked up with the domestic issues, and they tend to exaggerate a lot of things, including this summit was hyped by our media, and that goes out in the international media also. I do not blame Ambassador Bashimo for getting this observation, and it could be deliberate also. I don't mind saying that. You know, people feel a very sense of pride in, say, reaching out and competing with China, Russia, United States, you know, great power competition. All these things are part of the today's, but having said that, where is it coming from? I think this summit has come at a time when there is a tension going on between India and China, number one. You know, we have a problem at our border. And secondly, US-China tension is continuing. Russia-US tension is continuing. I think this summit has got caught into a crossfire. So there are a lot of interest intertwined into this, what India is doing and what India is not doing. So Ambassador Sajjanhar is correct. I think the Chinese also take this initiative as a zero-sum game, that we are going to Central Asia on behalf of the American. If that is the impression, I think the Chinese have got it wrong. That's not our approach. President Putin was here last month in Delhi, where we discussed about Central Asia, about Afghanistan, about connectivity, INST, Chabahar, everything we have discussed. So if that impression that India is playing for the United States and therefore trying to have a separate summit there is again a Chinese interpretation. The way the Chinese have conducted this summit with Central Asian countries, they announced less than 24 hours before. It smacks of a problem, and therefore, perhaps I don't know whether the Chinese also got an impression from the Indian media, like Ambassador Beshimo has got, that we are into some kind of a game. So I see that today the international atmosphere is not very conducive. I think partly because the Republic Day parade was coming and the heads of state was going to come here in New Delhi. Secondly, it was to coincide with the 30th anniversary of the Central Asian India diplomatic relationship and their independence. That couldn't have been avoided. But certainly it's true that the international environment, the way things are happening, it's very difficult even to conduct a normal day-to-day foreign policy thing. Everybody tries to see from a negative angle. Despite the hype created by the media, our own media, you see the agenda was very modest. Certain doable things, achievable things like connectivity, humanitarian assistance in Afghanistan. A lot of good things have been discussed. Gas pipeline, transportation. These are not competitions. These are cooperation. And I think India stands on its own feet in Central Asia. We don't need to talk about. The only point that I have problem with that both Central Asia and India are not honest enough to what Ambassador Beshimo has talked about. The potentials are there.
That is interesting. So what are those potential areas? You say India and Central Asians are not honest about those potentials. Let us be honest and bring them up. So what are those areas that are pushed back in summits like this? I would love if you can talk about them in concrete terms.
For example, the civilizational and cultural thing is the most important thing. Even the presidents of the Central Asian countries yesterday spoke. But it is somewhere in the bottom. Nobody takes interest in cultural and civilized. They are important only for speeches, but on practical ground, there's nothing. And let me give you one example. Central Asians are not comfortable about talking about Indian Buddhist heritage of Central Asia. And Indians are not comfortable talking about the Central Asian Islamic heritage in India. This is a real fact. And if you do not want to talk about it, you want to shy away about the realities, and India has no other advantage than the cultural one. Islam, Pakistan is doing. Military, Russia is doing. Economic, Chinese are doing. Turkey is doing ethnicity. What can India do? India only can do culture and civilization. But the reality is that both the Central Asians and Indians are not talking about the real issues. You know, the Buddhism went up to Japan through Central Asia, Fergana Valley. Who is talking about this? Central Asians are not interested. They are interested in Islam. People are interested in Hinduism. They are not interested in the Mughal history. There is a contradiction here. Unless we bring all these issues on the table, I don't think we can take the relations to that extent.
I mean, there are a couple of questions. Obviously, I also would like to invite back Ambassador Beshimo. I mean, hopefully the ambassadors were convincing to the points that you have raised, Ambassador Beshimo. Please hold your thoughts there, and I will invite you back in just a minute. So, Ambassador Stobdan, you were talking about the historical elements that kind of could bring, potentially bring, these two regions together. Nobody is talking about them. So what is stopping that discussion from happening? Why is that?
Well, the different ideological path, I think reality is that today we have a different kind of nationalism in this country, which is not comfortable with talking about the medieval part of Indian history. And in Central Asia, there is a resurgence of Islam and the communism or whatever that lingering still there. It's not talking about the Indian imprint of the Indian civilization. If you dig out something in Tashkent, I've been to Samarkand where President Karimov is buried. That is built on a Buddhistic heritage. If you dig even 2 meters down the graveyards of President Karimov, you will find a Buddha statue in that. But who is interested in discussing about that? The whole of Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, Kyrgyzstan, up to Chu Valley is about the Indian civilization. But is anybody interested in that? No, we only play lip service. I've been there. It's okay in some speeches we talk about ancient civilization contact. When it comes to doing something real, I think China goes away with Buddhism. And that's the problem.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, the Chinese have spent more money in Central Asia on Buddhist heritage than Indians do it. And that's a reality.
Yeah, I'd like to have this conversation without bringing the confrontational element to it, but it is there, as Ambassador Bashima raised earlier. So, Ambassador Bashima, when you look into like an Indian approach to Central Asia, we heard in length what the thinking or the direction of thinking is from New Delhi towards Central Asia. Are you now convinced? Do you have any further question, any further clarity that you would like to bring up while we have two former ambassadors from India?
First of all, I'm very grateful for the speeches of my former colleagues, esteemed ambassadors from India. I got a very convincing explanation regarding the influence of Indian civilization. Probably today we are facing some problems about which Mr. Stobdon spoke. But if we look at in the long term, I am sure that Central Asia will turn their attention, deep attention, to the influence of Buddhism as one of the foundations of the rise of civilization in that part of the world. It will. Of course, it's today limited, and you know why. Because Central Asians today are very concerned by the stability and peace, and the recent events in Kazakhstan prove that. But my question is, I would like to understand what are the strategic objectives of India in that part of the world and Central Asia? Do you see any continuity of Indian strategic policy in Central Asia? I personally did what I can in order to bring the best sides of Indian culture to my country. And I am so proud that the Center of Indian Civilization still exists at Osh University and so on. We initiated the book about relations between India and Central Asia during a long time. And this book was published and so on. That's why for me, it's so important to understand, do you see any continuity? Because 10 years ago, it was declared one policy before it and another policy. And this time, you are trying to convince me that you are not looking to this region from a lens of a rivalry. China. If so, I would like to understand this independent strategic objectives of India and Central Asia and continue of this strategy.
In long term, let me bring in here Ambassador Sijjanhart, perhaps you. So in long term, this India's strategic plans about Central Asia, the continuity in terms of strategic calculations. Let me also add one more question to Ambassador Bashima's question there. I mean, any strategy also needs to involve economy. Like, yes, you know, cultural exchanges are important, but also economy is important. Partnership, business developments are important. When I was listening to the speeches by the presidents and Prime Minister Modi yesterday, my takeaway was, at least on the economic field, there is not much going on as we speak. To the extent that it can grow, what is that like? The total sum of the bilateral trade in 2020 or 2021 was just $3 billion. And 80% of them were just with Kazakhstan. So, you know, it kind of raises question, Ambassador Sijjanhart. I mean, kind of bigger strategic calculation, where is Central Asia and India's foreign policy in the longer term?
Thank you very much for this question, Mr. Tahir. And also, let me thank Ambassador Bashima for his questions. I think very relevant and very valid. And let me try to respond to them, in the best manner that I possibly can. But before I do that, let me also make two aspects. You know, on the issue of Russia, you see, as far as India and Russia, when Mr. Putin was in India on the 6th of December, both the sides said that we will collaborate, we will cooperate as far as Central Asia is concerned. There have been some documents also that have been exchanged as to what, since in Central Asia, most of the defense equipment is of Soviet origin or Russian origin, as it is in India. So whether it is in terms of overhauling, it is in terms of upgrading, it is in terms of supplying of spare parts and so on and so forth. So that can be done. Now, coming to the question as to what is it that India is looking for. Number one, India is a rising economy. India is a growing economy. Notwithstanding the fact that, you know, the COVID-19, our economy also suffered. But in the current year, what the IMF has just come up with is India will be the fastest growing economy in the world with 9% plus growth. India does not have much energy. There is considerable energy, and we have started importing uranium from Kazakhstan. We are starting to import uranium from Uzbekistan. But there is oil, there is gas. From Turkmenistan, it is the fourth largest reserves of gas in the world. So if we can have a pipeline through Afghanistan and Pakistan, but there it is the security issues. But how is it that we can get energy and other minerals from Central Asia to India? That is number one. Number two, it is, you know, whatever one might say, these the populations might not be all that large. Kazakhstan has 19 million people. But its economy is pretty large. GDP is to the tune of about $200 billion. There are a large number of projects that are going on. So our companies who have been working in different countries, whether it is Africa, West Asia, everywhere, Southeast Asia, they've done contracts. They can go and they can work there. So the market there in for Indian companies is also very important. We have not been able to achieve that potential, Mr. Tahir. You said very correctly, only 3 billion. Why is only 3 billion? Because right at the beginning, I said we do not have connectivity. If we had connectivity, then we would be able to, if we had contiguous borders with any of the countries, we would be able to do that. Now, when we are talking about cultural connect, etc., that we've been speaking about, at that time, there used to be free movement from India through what is today Pakistan into Central Asia. Today, Pakistan does not allow Indian goods, products, cargo, or people to travel either to Afghanistan or to Central Asia. Right. So much so that in the face of this humanitarian catastrophe in Afghanistan, we have said, India has said, we give as aid 50,000 tons of wheat and essential medicines. Pakistan has not allowed even those shipments to go through its territory. So we are planning to ship them also via Chabahar, send them via Chabahar. It's going to take much longer. We have sent three consignments of essential medical supplies and 1 million COVID-19 vaccine doses to Afghanistan by air from India to Dubai and from there to be flown to Afghanistan, from India to Iran, Tehran to be sent to Afghanistan, because we don't have air connectivity also with Kabul at the moment. The point I'm making is that our trade is so low because we do not have proximate connectivity. So if we are able to get this connectivity via Chabahar, either through the international north-south transport corridor, it will help us not only to reach Afghanistan, not only to reach Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, etc., but it will also help us to go further across to Russia and to Europe. And that we have seen the test trials, they have demonstrated that it will be 40% less in terms of number of days and about 30 to 40% less in terms of cost. So I think there are all these reasons. And I would say that for the Central Asian countries, Mr. Tahir, we are having some discussions. I think India is a huge market. So anything that, and India can, as we have also spoken about capacity development, there are so many training programs. Ambassador Beshimov, I'm sure he is aware of that, that from Kyrgyzstan, from all these countries, we are having a large number of professionals who come to India on a regular basis to get training at our most premier institutions. And maybe lastly, I could also mention that in terms of defense training, defense exercises. In fact, today we have a Kazakh battalion which is serving under an Indian leadership in Lebanon. And Mr. Tokayev yesterday, he mentioned about that in his comments on at the summit.
Right. Yeah, very, very important points there. Ambassador, yeah, you know, there are so much to do, so much potentials, as you are, you know, pointing at. But, you know, the question again comes to this in terms of how to achieve this. There are obstacles, visible, touchable obstacles that has been an issue, like one being, you know, security in Afghanistan, the other being like, you know, the place in which Iran stands internationally. I mean, how much of potential is there through Chabahar to kind of expand this collaboration, and again, limitations that comes with it. So let's continue the conversation talking about these aspects of the questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Ambassador Ashok Sajanhar, former Indian ambassador to Kazakhstan, Ambassador Punchuk Stubdan, former Indian ambassador to Kyrgyzstan, Ambassador Bakit Bashimov, former Kyrgyz ambassador to India, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, Radio Free Radio Liberty's media manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing India and Central Asia ties in the context of recent leadership summit. So first of all, obviously I have a number of questions to, you know, to raise here, but I'm also aware that it's very late in India, and thank you very much, Ambassador, still being with us in this conversation. So Bruce, please jump in if you have any comments to make, any questions to raise, as we have ambassadors from both end of this conversation that I might have overlooked so far.
No, I'm just wondering, we could elaborate a little bit more on the connectivity, but I mean, one thing I have to say, and I agree with the ambassadors, what they've already mentioned, is that it was unfortunate that Chinese summit happened, and that people in the media try to, you know, to create some kind of tension and get the headlines and stuff like that. They seem to play them off against each other. I thought it was very unfortunate. I thought the Indian summit should have stood all by itself, but I know that journalists tend to like say, you know, try to, like I said, bump things up, make it seem more interesting somehow or another, that this comes right after the China summit or something. I mean, they were totally independent of each other. You know, I'm always curious about the connectivity. I mean, Chabahar, yes, and possibly the railroad, but is there like, what other possibilities are there for connectivity? I mean, I can see that both sides want it. But you know, with Afghanistan in the middle and with Pakistan in between them and stuff, this has always been the big drawback, the problem between India to Central Asia, certainly trade relations, but even more broadly between other relations the two countries could have, or the two regions could have with each other, that they're limited with the connectivity possibilities. And how do you get around that?
Ambassadors, you know, whoever wants to jump in here, ambassadors from India, how you do that to overcome this connectivity challenge here? Yes, we understand there's a need for it. There's a need for further development of ties, further development of business ties between India and Central Asia. But how to achieve that in terms of connectivity?
I think Ambassador Beshimo wants to say, you know, to jump in here.
Okay.
And I'd be happy to respond to the question that Bruce has raised about connectivity.
Okay.
You know, share my thoughts on that.
Sure. Ambassador Beshimov, jump in.
You know, what I think, I am seeing that all Central Asian countries are seeing very important strategic, looking at the strategic presence of India. Why? Because today we are trying to securitize everything, given the threat from Afghanistan.
Right.
And that's why the presence of India is vital to Central Asia. I see that. I give you some examples from my experience. Yes, recently I was in Dubai, and I was surprised by the number of visitors from Central Asia who headed to some neighboring countries in Gulf region and to Pakistan.
Right.
And the main purpose, it is they are looking for training in madrasas.
Hmm.
The number of them are really large. And the second thing, you know, we can say that for Central Asia today, it's so important to keep stability and do not let expansion of ideology of rulers from Afghanistan. It's a real threat. And that's why for Central Asia, it is important of a presence of benevolent powers. I completely agree when characterize your country as a benign. power. I completely agree, because during these 30 years, I didn't see any attempt of India to do that is against the interests of these countries. Mm. I give you one example to prove it. Okay. If I release a secret after many years, I think you will punish the people for that. In 1990 and 2000, I just came to India as a newly appointed ambassador, and groups of militants entered from Afghanistan to Kyrgyzstan, you know. We were objecting to go to Uzbekistan. At that time, it's a big crisis, and the Kyrgyz authorities faced tremendous problem to identify what number to monitor their motion in the mountains of Kyrgyzstan and their clear intention. And I went to the headquarters of intelligence in New Delhi. And, you know, to my biggest surprise, I didn't expect that. To my biggest surprise, I was very well accepted. And even they gave me special information and materials from space about monitoring motion of these groups of militants in the mountains of Kyrgyzstan. I immediately delivered this to Bishkek and so on. It was very useful. Until now, I didn't tell about it until now. And I say, this is a clear example. That's why the presence of India is so important in all these countries. And of course, we can discuss the impediments regarding the connectivity and so on. But I see the following continuing strategic objectives of India. It is security issues. It is cooperation in military, in defense, training. Personally, I visited Ladakh and so on. I saw at that time possibility of a special training of a military acting in a high mountains, and you can see the same issue. And I'm so glad that both countries, after that, we continue this kind of exercises and so on. After that, I see the huge opportunity for cultural presence of India. And unfortunately, this potential is not yet realized. And I would like to assure Mr. Stobden that despite, I agree with you, these impediments, there is a chance, there is an opportunity. And in that kind of things, we need to be more stubborn and more tough in pushing forward this agenda. I am so lucky. I continue to keep a friendship with many people in India, and time to time visiting this wonderful country. Therefore, I see the potential, and it's not based on my media observation or my theoretical assumption. It's based on my practical experience.
Yeah, thank you, Master. You know, the conversation today is so fluent. I don't have to come up with any question today. Love to be in this crowd. So on Bruce's question about the connectivity challenges, and Ambassador Bashimu's comments also sort of falls in this frame. Yes, so there are windows of opportunities to expand cooperation. There are areas to improve collaboration, bilateral ties. Totally agree on that. But how to bridge this cooperation, how to overcome the connectivity challenge? As we discussed, the way things are seen today, there are not much options. So far, what we have seen is only Chabahar as one of the concrete steps in this direction. And yes, that's good, but Iran direction remains a problematic one. But even if things work out through Iran, that offers you a very limited option. You need more windows to expand people-to-people connection, business-to-business ties, cultural exchange. So what are your options? Okay, let's start with Ambassador Sajjanhar, with you.
Okay, thank you very much. So, you know, let me first give one or two comments to what Ambassador Bashimov has mentioned about collaborating in the area of fighting terrorism, fighting extremism and militarism. Two instances I would like to bring to your attention. You know, when the recent violence and bloodshed occurred in Kazakhstan, then President Tokayev, he mentioned that there are Islamic terrorists among the people who are creating all these problems. He said that there are terrorists from Afghanistan. You know, these are exactly the words he used in his address to the nation on the 7th of January.
And there was lots of question about that, Ambassador, and just wanted to point out. There were lots of questions about the legitimacy of his points.
Yeah, exactly. In my writings also, I have mentioned that, you know, although President Tokayev has mentioned, but there has been no evidence that has been furnished to substantiate these. But I'm saying, I'm not questioning, I'm not supporting, I'm not discarding, but I'm just saying that this is what he mentioned.
Right.
The second instance, so, you know, there are problems of radicalization, as Ambassador Beshimov mentioned, and we know it, that these issues of radicalization, and this is what finds also mention in the Delhi Declaration that was issued yesterday. The second aspect that I would like to bring to your attention and those of your listeners is that, you know, 2 years ago, there are what is called the Easter bombings that took place in Sri Lanka, in which I think more than 200 people were killed. There were bombs blasted, you know, planted in 3, 4, 5 churches on Easter Day. And many days before that, India had furnished intelligence to Sri Lanka saying that on Easter Day, this is what is expected, so please take action. And because at that time there was a problem between the Prime Minister, Mr. Ranil Wickremasinghe, and the President, Mr. Sirisena, this information, the intelligence information that had been provided by India, that could not go to the right people who could take action. And so Sri Lanka suffered all these many blasts and all these many deaths in churches, in hotels, and so on and so forth. The point I'm trying to make here is that India has a long experience of fighting terrorism and of fighting radicalization. And this is definitely an area where India could share its knowledge, its experience, its expertise with our friends from Central Asia, because particularly in the context of what is happening in Afghanistan. And we know that there are not only the Taliban, not only the Haqqani group, not only the ISI, but there are so many other terrorist groups that are based there. You know, whether it's not only Al-Qaeda and it's not only the Islamic State of Khorasan province. Mm. There are so many other terrorist groups, whether it is IMU or Ansarullah Jamaat or ETIM or Jaish or Lashkar or whatever.
But how can India help in that front, Ambassador, if you want to be a little bit specific? I mean, yes, like in theory, it looks like India has lots of expertise to offer, and Central Asia needs that kind of expertise. In practical terms, how this sort of cooperation is going to look like?
The most important thing is sharing intelligence. That is what I was talking about when in the case of Sri Lanka, we had forewarned the authorities in Sri Lanka that attacks could be forthcoming. So sharing of intelligence and training of people, I think these two would be very, very important. Because stability, peace, security in Afghanistan and Central Asia is as important for those countries as it is for us. Because in India also, our peace and security depends upon peace and security in that region. So it is a win-win aspect for both of us. And, you know, without going into details, I know that that is why, you know, we have also said that there should be a regular meeting of the national, of the heads of the national security councils of all these countries. And this is an aspect that has been accepted. It's a part of the Delhi Declaration. So I think this is definitely one area where we can work together.
Thank you.
What Bruce mentioned very quickly, if I can very briefly refer to that, and that is in terms of connectivity. You know, Chabahar, we started discussing that project in 2003, but nothing could be done till we had the JCPOA, which was signed in 2015. And after that, when the sanctions were lifted from Iran, that is the time when we started working on it. Possibly your listeners might not recall. Prime Minister Modi had traveled to Iran in May of 2016. There was a trilateral meeting between Afghanistan. At that time, Mr. Ashraf Ghani was there. President of Afghanistan, President of Iran, Rouhani, and Prime Minister Modi. And that was the time when the Chabahar agreement was signed. And from May 2016 till December 2017, the Chabahar was inaugurated by President Rouhani, and India had been able to increase the capacity of the Shahid Baheshti terminal from 2.5 million tons to 8.5 million tons. And after that, after 2017, we had Mr. Trump coming in and his withdrawal from JCPOA. Right. So again, that has suffered. Mm-hmm. So what we have been looking at is that if relations between Iran and the United States, if they were to normalize, then we could start working on Chabahar. I will give you one rider here, which is that even Mr. Trump had said that Chabahar is out of the sanctions. Because the Americans could also understand the importance and relevance of Chabahar for reaching to Afghanistan, which was a strategic issue for them. But because Iran was under sanction, no companies were willing to come to Chabahar and work with us. So hopefully, if things get better, things normalize, then we would be able to use Chabahar. And we have proposed that Chabahar should also be made a part of the international North-South transport corridor. If that happens, then of course business volume and development of the hinterland in Chabahar will increase. And I think it has a great deal of potential because it has a very good hinterland.
Right. Yeah, let's see where we go with Chabahar. And also, you know, discussions are happening with Iran, but at this moment, I do not see any breakthrough coming out of Vienna, where the discussions are happening on Iran's nuclear program. But other than what can Chabahar offer, in case if Chabahar is established, there were a couple of other projects that cannot be done through Chabahar, like, you know, the railway project that you mentioned, one of you mentioned, ambassadors from India, that in the planning from Uzbekistan somehow ending up in India, I guess. Or the other is the TAPI project, which would carry, in case of implemented, Turkmen gas through Afghanistan to Pakistan and India. I mean, how do you see the future for those kind of projects in a situation now that Afghanistan is controlled by the Taliban? And Taliban, you know, I could sense that from Prime Minister Modi's comments yesterday that they are not looked at pleasantly from India, just to put it mildly. So what's the future for that? It's open kind of question. Maybe if Ambassador Stubdhan, you want to take this question, please take
away. Thank you. Very interesting questions. I think we are still talking and going to talk about in the realm of potential only, a possibility, long term. There's nothing going to happen in concrete terms in the near future. You know, this nature of the Iranian politics is not going to go away unless there is another revolution in that country. All this nuclear thing and all these things will continue. And I don't think just because we have to have a railway line from Chabahar, they will change the national politics of Iran. And that's not going to happen according to our wishes. Secondly, 20 years ago, we were looking at Central Asia from the energy point of view. And some of our companies had gone to Kazakhstan also in the Caspian area.
Right.
And we are still stuck in some of the blocks there. Nothing is coming out from that region. But today, the demand for oil has shrunk. We don't need oil now. The global market is full of oil. Prices are coming down. Gas, yes, but the oil is not much in that demand. Thirdly, I don't know, why do we need a railway from Iran unless there is a high value items which has to be imported throughout the year? You know, 12 months, 160 days, volume of trade has to come from that region. Now, as far as I understand, even from Afghanistan, we only import dry fruits. Now, in order to have dry fruits, even the fresh fruits from Uzbekistan or Kyrgyzstan, like watermelon and grapes and pomegranate, I don't think we required a railway for 12 months. Those demands are fulfilled by Iranians or Spanish or other countries also supplying. So I don't see a particular need to focus so much on the railway and all these things, but these are good diplomatic talking points. You need some items, of course. You know, we have spent a couple of $100 million in Chabahar. That will continue. But even going beyond Chabahar to Zaidan, there is a problem of terrorism of Sistan. Nobody is talking about that. In order to get a pipeline through Pakistan and Afghanistan, I have calculated that something like $1 billion will go to Pakistan from India as a ground rent. You know, the pipeline has to come from the Pakistani territory.
Right.
Somebody has to pay the rent.
Right.
And even if I pay $500 million rent to Pakistan, I really don't know whether they're going to sponsor terrorism on my money against my country. There are all kind of apprehension. And then I don't know where this pipeline is going to be located within the Pakistani territory. Along the strategic assets of installations of Pakistan, Now, in a conflict-like situation, I really don't know whether I'll bomb the Pakistani military installation or I'll bomb my own pipeline. So all kind of contradictions are surfacing, and it's not very easy to get a good answer for all these things. As essentially what Ambassador Beshimer was mentioning, it's all about geopolitics, to be very frank. We need peace and stability in Central Asia. So far, it has been quite good. 30 years we passed without much problem. There are some internal problems, but that had no impact on India as such. But I think after the coming of Taliban to Afghanistan, threat from this region to us, I won't say Central Asian threat from the continent. You know, we have been focused on in our maritime domain, say Indo-Pacific, Quad, well, all these things for last so many years. So we forgot about this region. But suddenly, because of Taliban, the threat from this region has increased manifold. And we are worried. We are concerned. And it's not just about Afghanistan today. What has happened in Kazakhstan this month? Now, as per President Tokayev, reports are to be taken seriously. He's talking about the third power or third hand or hidden hand. I don't know which forces are now trying to destabilize. And so soon after the Americans have left Afghanistan. Now, if I read the assessment of the Tajik experts, he says that there are n numbers of ISIS and Takfiris and even the IS Khorasan. Thousands and 10,000 people are still gathered in north of Afghanistan. They're waiting to infiltrate inside Tajikistan or Uzbekistan, Turkmenistan, and Kyrgyzstan, and may go up to Kazakhstan and Russia. So if that is the kind of a future scenario, it doesn't work for the Indian interest. So peace and security, the kind of system. But today, what we are faced with the situation is that on the one side, you have the Islamic threat. On the other side is the Chinese expansion. And the Russian ability to now have a full hold over the region is, I think it's a question mark. They are in all kind of direction now in the Eastern Europe and everywhere. So it's a very grim situation for India. We don't have much of a choice. If the Russians are not able, then I have to choose between two, Islam and China.
Right.
Tell me which one should I choose. Wow. I have no capacity to come to Central Asia. You know, I can't deploy force in Central Asia. Even in Afghanistan, we didn't send troops to Afghanistan, despite the Afghan government has been wanting to have a lot of strategic position of India in Kabul. We haven't done that. We haven't put our boots on the ground. Now, if Central Asia get Islamized or, you know, extremism and fundamentalism is spread throughout, then I think it's a very serious situation for India. We have challenges, you know, because of Pakistan, in South Asia also.
Yeah.
So I think we are looking at it from this angle.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. Eye-opener, Ambassador Stubtan. You know, to sum up, kind of, we need to wrap up the conversation very quickly. You know, what you are saying is like, yeah, India wants to be player in Central Asia. It wants to improve its ties, but, you know, take it easy. Nothing is going to come fast, quick. So let me end the conversation with one final point from Bruce Panier. So, Bruce, you know, this summit has happened. So what has changed as a result of this summit? And where your eyes as a journalist, as an analyst, is going to be going forward in terms of where we go from here?
Well, the summit in itself was a big event. I mean, it's symbolic of something that hopefully we're about to enter a new era of relations between India and Central Asia. You know, again, I was kind of making the point before, but if you ask most people in Central Asia, and I think even that would include government officials, if you get them to speak off the record, you know, they really want better ties with India. When you know, we talk about that Central Asia has close ties with China and Russia, and they do. But, you know, the attitude, when you ask people in Central Asia what they think about China, you get very suspicious answers. They're not real sold on that one. You know, I mean, there really seems to be a genuine desire, on the other hand, to have better ties with India and for that to grow as fast as possible. So, you know, you can't underestimate the value of this summit. It says something. It reminds all the people in Central Asia that India has been a partner for 30 years and wants to be even a closer partner to Central Asia in the future. So I think that was the significance, the real big significance of the summit to begin with. You know, and now we just have to get over the logistics. I mean, logistics have always been a problem, but, you know, at least there's been a start, and connectivity is now the buzzword for, you know, really for the world, but it will help to improve Central Asia, Indian ties, which, like I said, go back, you know, a long, long way. So,
yeah, you know, that kind of sums up, you know, it's been a long conversation today, but it was a great one. We don't often talk about India in Central Asia, and we don't often have three ambassadors lined up and joining in this conversation, but it was a great one. Thank you very much. So with this, we unfortunately have to conclude the conversation here. So thank you, Ambassador Ashok Sajjanher, former Indian ambassador to Kazakhstan, Ambassador Ponchuk Stobdan, former Indian ambassador to Kyrgyzstan, Ambassador Bakit Bashimov, former Kyrgyz ambassador to India, and Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe Liberty Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Thank you very much, colleagues, for being part of the conversation today. And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.